Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette dated for this state, Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. Let's begin with reading some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Champaign County Primary Election, First Day of Candidate Filing Yields Several Area Contests. This article is written, by Tom Kacich, that's K-A-C-I-C-H, and is based out of Urbana. Patsy Petrie, P-A-T-T-S-I-P-E-T-R-I-E, Patsy Petrie, a veteran of 7 years on the Champaign County Board and a one-time chair of the board, will face her fifth primary election contest since 2008 next spring. Petrie, a Democrat who represents District 6 in Central Champaign, is being challenged by two other Democrats in the March 20th primary election, first-time candidate Mike Ingram, that's I-N-G-R-A-M, and Charles Young, who ran unsuccessfully for the Champaign School Board in 2003 and was a candidate for appointment last month to an opening on the Parkland College Board. So far, the Democratic contest in District 6 is one of a handful of contested primary races that developed after the first day of candidate filing on Monday. Other contested primary races thus far. For the Democratic nomination in the 13th Congressional District, where Eric Jones of Edwardsville, Betsy Londrigan of Springfield, and John Ebel of Urbana filed on Monday, along with incumbent Republican Rodney Davis of Taylorville. In the 16th Congressional District, north of Champaign-Urbana, where two Democrats, Sarah, S-A-R-A, Daddy, D-A-D-Y, of Rockford, and Neil, N-E-I-L-L, Mohammed, of DeKalb, hope to be their party's nominee against incumbent Representative Adam Kinzinger, a Republican from Shanahan. In the 104th Illinois House District, where two Democrats, Cynthia Cunningham of rural St. Joseph and Frank McCullough Jr. of Danville, filed Monday, Republican Mike Marron, M-A-R-R-O-N, of rural Fithian also filed. And in the 101st Illinois House District, where Republicans Dan Calkins, that's C-A-U-L-K-I-N-S, of Decatur, and Todd Hendricks, H-E-N-R-I-C-K-S, of Cerro Gordo, filed Monday. No Democrat has come forward yet. In the 6th Judicial Circuit, where Republican Randy Rosenbaum of Champaign and Sammy Anderson of rural Gifford filed Monday for the seat once held by Judge Harry Clem. Also in the 6th Circuit, Bradford Rau, R-A-U, and Jeremy Ritchie, R-I-C-H-E-Y, both of Sullivan, filed for the seat once held by Judge Dan Flannel. No Democrats had filed in either race. And two Republicans, Michael Smith of Tuscola and Kyle Thompson of Charleston, are running for regional superintendent in the Clark, Coles, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Moultrie, and Shelby counties region. Also, Matt Grandone, G-R-A-N-D-O-N-E, of Urbana, and John Rector of rural Champaign are running for the Republican nomination for Champaign County Clerk. No Democrat had filed yet. Meanwhile, there's no rest for Petrie, who lost a four-way race for one seat on the board in 2008, finishing second out of four Democrats, but came out on top in another four-way primary race in 2010 and overcame challenges from Josh Hartke, H-A-R-T-K-E, in 2012, and Tony Fabry, F-A-B-R-I, in 2014. The future of the county nursing home as a county-supported facility undoubtedly will be an issue in the District 6 race. In recent months, Petrie has voted in favor of issuing a request for proposals from private operators who might be interested in purchasing the facility from the county, and also supported a six-month budget for the home for the fiscal year that begins January 1st. Both votes placed her at odds with the majority of other county board Democrats. Ingram said the nursing home was a pretty big factor in his decision to run for the board. He said he supports keeping the facility publicly owned. "I don't think there's anything more important on the minds of people right now than the nursing home," he said. "But there are plenty of other things that people are talking about when I asked them what they knew about at the local level." Young also said the nursing home's future is a top concern of voters. "The hot topic now, of course, is that nursing home. I'm sort of like still in the middle with that," he said. I want to protect the home, but at the same time, what I've been reading and following is the money issue. We'll see how that works out. I'd like to get there and see how that stuff works." Petrie said she believes a nursing home has to become self-sustaining. I've constantly and consistently said that the county needs to be concerned about positioning that nursing home so it will be sustainable not for 1 or 2 years, but for a decade, she said. This roller coaster ride on the nursing home is exhausting everybody, and the county isn't getting any other work done. Petrie said she isn't troubled by the regular challenges from within her own party. I look at that as positive, though. That means you go out and you talk to your constituents more often, she said. I do retail politics. I knock on doors. Every door. And a quick follow-up to this, Tom Kachik's three races to watch. Here are the three. One, the 13th Congressional District. In the primary, there will be Democratic candidates from the four corners of the 14-county district. John Ebel from Urbana, David Gill from Bloomington, Betsy Londrigan, that's L-O-N-D-R-I-G-A-N, from Springfield, and Eric Jones from Edwardsville. After that, the winner faces incumbent Representative Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville who already has more than $1 million and could have a lot more to spend as the year progresses. The second race to watch, Champaign County Clerk. The Republican primary pits Matt Grandone, backed by incumbent County Clerk Gordy Holton and a host of other Republicans, against John Rector, supported by County Recorder Mark Sheldon. That's S-H-E-L-D-E-N. The winner likely will face Democrat Aaron Ammons, the husband of State Representative Carol Ammons of Urbana, who may not have an opponent and can spend a lot of time on her husband's race. An unusual amount of time and money may be invested in that contest. Also, the last race to watch, Champaign County Board. Republicans will make another run at regaining control of the board, with a number of challenges coming in normally Democratic districts. Democrats, meanwhile, will spend the first 3 months of 2018 watching a three-way battle in District 6, where incumbent Patsy Petrie will be challenged again. And primary election countdown, 112 days, off and running. Area outlook. We asked our in-house expert from across the area, what will be the most compelling storyline in the county you cover? So out of Vermilion, Danville Bureau reporter Tracy Crane says, paperwork hasn't yet been filed, but it appears likely county voters will be asked to okay a 1 cent sales tax bump to generate revenue for public schools. If approved, Danville would have the highest city sales tax outside of Chicago. Out of Piatt County, Journal Republican editor Steve Hoffman says, after two failed bids for a new $40 million high school, the Monticello School District will likely float a $29.8 million ballot question for a rehab of MHS. Likely to be part of the plan, a new gym and classroom additions for the high school and adjacent Washington Elementary School. Out of Ford County, Ford County Record editor Will Brumleave says, so far, only the Republican race for treasurer will be contested in the primary. Cassie Schwartz and Paxton's Krisha Shoemaker, who are vying to succeed Penny Stevens, both filed paperwork Monday morning. And out of Douglas County, County beat writer Tim Mitchell says, a lottery will be held December 13th to determine which Republican sheriff candidate's name will lead off the ballot. It's a crowded field with incumbent Fred Galley, G-A-L-E-Y, out of Tuscola, facing challenges from coroner Joe Victor and Douglas Sheriff's Sergeant Joshua Blackwell out of Tuscola. The next headline reads, University of Illinois research, cancer breakthrough, ready for patient trials. Drug makes tumor cells self-destruct. This article is written by Julie Wirth, W-U-R-T-H, and is based out of Champaign. A drug developed by a University of Illinois scientist that prompts cancer cells to self-destruct has been cleared for use in a clinical trial of patients with two types of aggressive brain cancer. The trials will determine if the experimental drug PAC-1, which has been used to treat brain cancer in dogs, can be used safely in combination with a standard brain cancer chemotherapy drug, temozolomide. That's T-E-M-O-Z-O-L-O-M-I-D-E. Temozolomide. It will be tested on patients with a rare malignant brain tumor called anaplastic astrocytoma, or with glioblastoma multiforme, an aggressive late-stage brain cancer. The trial is an extension of an ongoing Phase 1 clinical trial that started 2 years ago in which patients with other late-stage cancers have taken doses of PAC-1 by itself. Under FDA rules, Phase 1 trials test the safety of new drugs, not their effectiveness. Once researchers settle on a safe, tolerable dose of PAC-1, later Phase 2 trials will more with more patients, we'll test how well it actually works. The process could take several more years, but if early results show the drug is working, there are FDA mechanisms to speed up approval, said UVI chemistry professor Paul Hergenrother, H-E-R-G-E-N-R-O-T-H-E-R, who discovered PAC-1's anti-cancer effects more than a decade ago. We're optimistic, but it's still early, Hergenrother said Monday. Glioblastoma is so deadly, any improvement would be really significant for these patients and their families. PAC-1 has an unusual ability to cross the blood-brain barrier, an obstacle to most anti-cancer drugs. The drug targets procaspase 3, an overexpressed enzyme in many cancer cells, Hergenrother said. After tests in human cell lines and rodents proved promising, Hergenrother and veterinary oncologist Dr. Timothy Fan, FAN, a UVI professor of veterinary clinical medicine, tested PAC-1 in pet dogs with bone and blood cancer and most recently glioma, a brain cancer similar to glioblastoma in humans. One 2016 study found that the combination of PAC-1 with doxorubicin, a chemotherapy agent that also is used in humans, saw tumor reductions in all four dogs with lymphoma, blood cancer, and in 3 of 6 dogs with osteosarcoma, bone cancer. We are focusing much more on brain cancer at this point, Hergenthaler said. That's Hergenrother, it should be said. PAC-1 has a unique ability to get into the brain. It would be potentially a very good drug to treat brain cancers. The ongoing clinical trial of PAC-1 in human patients with late-stage tumors and lymphoma has shown that the drug is well-tolerated at doses of up to 450 milligrams per day, said medical oncologist Dr. Arkadiusz, that's A-R-K-A-D-I-U-S-Z, Dudek, D-U-D-E-K, who chairs an advisory board for Vanquish Oncology, the company that is funding the clinical trials. So far, the trials of PAC-1 alone have showed no significant side effects in humans and only occasional gastrointestinal problems in dogs, the researchers report. Surgery is a first-line therapy for anaplastic astrocytoma, followed by treatment with temozolomide, one of the few effective treatments for brain cancer, Dudek said in a U of I release. Patients with glioblastoma usually have surgery to remove as much of the cancerous tissue as possible, followed by radiation and treatment with temozolomide, but it is almost impossible to find and remove all glioblastoma cancer cells. They spread silently along the blood vessels inside the brain, which is why most patients see the disease return later after surgery and radiation, Dudek said. The median survival for patients undergoing standard treatment for glioblastoma is about 15 months, he said. The three dogs in the glioma trial tolerated the combined treatment of PAC-1 and temozolomide well, and all three showed at least a 30% reduction in the tumor, Dudek said. In one, the tumor disappeared completely after 84 days of treatment. A much larger study of dogs or in dogs would be needed to determine whether the effects are consistent and to quantify how much PAC-1 contributed to the results, Fan said in the release. Vanquish Oncology, the startup that Hergenrother helped found in 2011, has licensed the technology from the U of I and is focused on moving PAC-1 into clinical use. Hergenrother is the company's chief science officer. Fan is vice president of preclinical development, and Dudek chairs the clinical advisory board. All have financial ties to the community. The human clinical trials will be offered at the U of I Cancer Center in Chicago, Regents Hospital Cancer Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, and Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. Patients interested in participating can get contact information for all three sites from the National Institutes of Health Clinical Trials website, which is clinicaltrials.gov/beta. And then you would have to search for PAC-1. Now let's take a quick look at our weather forecast for the next week, provided to us by Greg Soulge, that's S-O-U-L-J-E, his column on the weather front. Today, 62 degrees, increasing clouds, southwest wind 15 to 25 miles per hour and gusty. Overnight, partly cloudy. Wednesday, high of 52, low of 36, mostly sunny. Overnight, some light rain in spots. Thursday, 51, low of 42, becoming partly cloudy after a little rain in spots before noon. Friday, the high will be 47, the low is 32, it will be sunny. Saturday, high of 51, low of 34, mostly sunny. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. On Tuesdays, we'll introduce the kids behind High School Confidential. Today, Rand Tools, Hannah, H-A-N-N-A-H, Combs, C-O-M-B-S. It's Combs' turn to take over our Snapchat account this week. While she doesn't have a football state championship game to showcase, Gibson City Melvin Sibley Sr., Haley Rutledge, did a whale of a job on Friday in DeKalb. Combs does have plenty to brag about from her Champaign County school. Everyone in the student body is so accepting, encouraging, and positive, she said. Follow her Snapchat takeover by searching for News Gazette on the app. Also follow Combs on Instagram at handle Hannah_Combs_. And our online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a seven-day period ending Sunday saw 954,842 page views. Top stories, the three top stories were 1. Man fatally shot in West Champaign. 2. St. Joseph man charged with DUI and I-74 wreck. And 3. BTN to avoid chief logo in broadcasts and in merchandise. The three top sports stories, 1. 82nd News Gazette All-State football team. 2. Live Augustana. And 3. Tate, future cloudy for Illini after latest debacle. The three top videos, 1. GCMS football wins state. 2. Underwood excited for our growth today. And 3. Game of the week, Tuscola versus Athens Class 1A football semis. The three top photo galleries were 1. High school football Class 2A championship, GCMS versus Maroa Forsyth. 2. High school boys basketball, GCMS Turkey Tourney. And 3. High school football Class 1A championship, Tuscola versus Lena Winslow. And in our history, area history, in 1917, predictions for the annual Thanksgiving Day battle between the Champaign and Urbana High School football teams still favored the Maroons. The two old rivals had not been defeated so far that season. The game was expected to draw a record-breaking crowd at Champaign's McKinley Field. In 1967, approximately 350 University of Illinois students and a handful of faculty members attended a noon rally in support of the 7 undergraduate students who were dismissed from the U of I for participating in an October 25th sit-in demonstration over the appearance of recruiters on campus from Dow Chemical Company. In 2002, a sewer break on campus that sent raw sewage streaming into Boneyard Creek in August cost the Urbana and Champaign Sanitary District at least $140,000 to fix, a cost it was trying to recover from the state. Dennis Schmidt, executive director of the district, said it had every intention of getting reimbursement. And in international history, today's highlight is on November 28, 1942, fire engulfed the Coconut Grove nightclub in Boston, killing 492 people in the deadliest nightclub blaze ever. The cause of the fast-spreading fire, which began in the basement, is in dispute. And now we'll take a look at Jim Dye's column. Bayman case all over, including the shouting. That's the headline. Bayman. I apologize for any mispronunciation. I think it's Bayman, B-E-A-M-A-N. Bayman case all over, including the shouting. The law is about rights, wrong, and remedies, and there are many wrongs for which there are no remedies. Just ask Alan Bayman. The former Illinois Wesleyan University student from Rockford spent 13 years behind bars after being convicted of a murder he did not commit. Last week, the Illinois Supreme Court denied his last-ditch request to review a lower court decision throwing out the wrongful prosecution lawsuit he filed against the City of Normal and 3 police officers. Before that, a federal court had dismissed a similar lawsuit Bayman filed against prosecutors and police officers. So, 24 years after his former girlfriend was murdered and Bayman became a key suspect in the case, the criminal and civil litigation generated in the state and federal courts is over. As a legal matter, we're done. There are no further avenues of legal relief, said Beeman's lawyer, Mark Shapiro, a law professor at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. Although Bayman's efforts fell short in his federal and civil lawsuits against police and prosecutors, he won major victories in the effort to overturn his conviction and establish his innocence. For starters, the Illinois Supreme Court overturned his conviction. Describing the evidence against Bayman as, quote-unquote, not particularly strong, the High Court said the state's failure to turn over exculpatory evidence to the defense about a potential suspect in the case required a new trial. Prosecutors ultimately decided not to retry Bayman. That suspect was identified as Larbi, L-A-R-B-I, John Murray, a sometime boyfriend of the victim. Beeman, Murray, and others were among those police considered potentially responsible for Jennifer Lockmiller's death, at least before they focused their efforts exclusively on Beeman. But as DNA evidence revealed years later, none of the men police originally considered suspects were linked to DNA samples recovered from the victim's body and examined nearly 20 years later. Tests revealed that two so far unidentified men are the sources of the DNA, phantoms who are now the leading suspects. That is why the Lockmiller death investigation remains pending in McLean County. It was the discovery of the new DNA evidence that persuaded McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers to reverse his predecessor's stance and drop opposition to Bayman's request for a certificate of innocence. Bayman later received about $175,000 in state-ordered compensation as a result of the innocence finding. Another big Beeman win came when the then-Governor Pat Quinn granted Beeman a pardon based on his innocence in the Lockmiller case. But Shapiro said Beeman was someone who went from being a college student to a prisoner, and $175,000 just doesn't measure up at all to what he went through. Shapiro said that the civil lawsuits filed on Beeman's behalf failed because the courts have held that police officers can't be held liable for the prosecutor's actions, and prosecutors can't be held liable for prosecution. Beeman was convicted of the August 28, 1993 murder of Miss Lockmiller, his former girlfriend, who was a student at Illinois State University, and sentenced to 50 years in prison. Although living with his parents in Rockford at the time, authorities theorized that Beeman drove from Rockford, killed his girlfriend in a jealous rage at her apartment after discovering signs that she had been with another man, and then returned home. They argued that his actions fit within a roughly four-hour period, about 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., time when Beeman could not establish his whereabouts. Bank camera footage showed him making a deposit about 10 a.m. that day, while his mother said she saw him at their family home about 2 p.m. After the state's highest court declined his request to proceed with his civil case, Beeman issued a statement in which he expressed mixed feelings about the courts, gratitude that his conviction was overturned, and disappointment that his lawsuit against police cannot go forward. In order to properly protect the badge, it is essential to protect our mostly good cops from the bad attitudes and now glorified entitlement of a few of their properly trained peers. Police misconduct has become an epidemic, and while our courts look the other way, it will only get worse, said Beeman, who later told the Pantograph in Bloomington Normal that McLean County should establish a conviction integrity unit to review questionable convictions. Shapiro, Beeman's lawyer, suggested his now former client will continue to speak out. I'm sure the world has not heard the last of him as a powerful voice of criminal justice reform, he said. Shapiro also described Beeman as an American hero massively wronged by the legal system. Now married, the father of two daughters, and working as a design engineer, Beeman probably would be better described as a victim of an all-powerful and sometimes dangerously flawed judicial system, although the manner in which he persevered for years behind bars, is hugely impressive. The next headline reads, Staged Suicide. Glenowitz Case Delayed. That's G-L-I-N-I-E-W-I-C-Z. Glenowitz Case Delayed. This is an article written by the Associated Press and is based out of Waukegan. Attorneys say they're waiting for an Illinois appellate court ruling in the case against the wife of a former Fox Lake police lieutenant who killed himself and made it look like it was duty-related. The ruling could decide whether prosecutors can use as evidence text and email messages that Melody, M-E-L-O-D-I-E, Glenowitz, had with her late husband, Charles. A new court date hasn't been set in the case. Lake County prosecutors said during a brief status hearing Monday that appellate court prosecutors are expected to file their arguments this week. She has pleaded not guilty to charges including siphoning money from the village's youth policing program. The next headline reads, Illinois roads. Officials urge motorists to prepare for winter weather. This article is collectively written by the Associated Press and is based out of Springfield. Illinois officials are encouraging motorists to prepare for the onset of winter. Officials with the Illinois State Police, Transportation Department, and Tollway are pushing the theme, Winter Weather, Get It Together. Transportation Secretary Randy Blankenhorn, B-L-A-N-K-E-N-H-O-R-N, says winter weather is unpredictable. The agency has posted a safe driving video online. Officials remind those behind the wheel that state law requires seatbelt use and prohibits texting. They say motorists should always accelerate, steer, and brake more slowly, as well as driving more slowly. Cruise control is not recommended in snowy or icy weather, and drivers should beware of quote-unquote black ice on roads that appear clear. And intersections, bridges, and shady areas are also prone to icing. Officials say snow plows should always be given plenty of room. The next headline reads, African American History. University honors woman scholar. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. The University of Chicago is preparing to unveil a sculpture in honor of a 1900s alumna who was the first black woman to receive a doctorate from the university. Students Asya, A-S-Y-A, Akka, A-K-C-A, Asia Akka, I believe, and Shay, S-H-A-E, Ominijo, O-M-O-N-I-J-O, will unveil a bust of Georgiana Rose Simpson at the Reynolds Club today, the Chicago Tribune reported. The Reynolds Club is the university's student center that was once accessible only to white males. The University of Chicago is on the south side in a predominantly African-American community, and yet there is not that much African-American history represented on our campus, Ominijo said. This is despite the fact that so many prominent black scholars came from this institution. Ominijo and Akka said they want to work to develop new monuments of women and minorities who have gone unrecognized for their contributions. Records show Simpson was asked to leave the dorms after her presence caused uproar among students because of her race. She commuted to campus until she completed her studies. The next headline reads, Champaign County Coroner, gunshot caused death. This article is written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Urbana. The Champaign County coroner said a gunshot wound caused the death of a Champaign man early Saturday morning. Dwayne Northrup said that Martrell, M-A-R-T-R-E-L-L, Martrell Johnson, 28, of Champaign, was pronounced dead at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana at 4:41 a.m. Saturday. Preliminary information from an autopsy performed Monday in Urbana showed that Mr. Johnson died from a gunshot wound to the chest. According to police, Johnson was involved in a shooting incident in a parking lot outside the Country Brook Apartments in the 2500 block of West Springfield Avenue shortly after 4 a.m. Saturday. The case remains under investigation by Northrop's office and the Champaign Police Department. Anyone with information on Saturday's shooting is encouraged to call Champaign Police at the following number. That number is 217-351-4545. Callers who want to remain anonymous may contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers, and that number is 217-373-TIPS, 373TIPS.com, or through a free app for smartphones called P3TIPS. The next headline reads, Rural Rantoul, three men charged in weapons case. This article is also written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Urbana. Two Lota men and one Rankin man were arrested on weapons charges following an incident Thanksgiving evening in rural Rantoul. Austin Matthew Flessner, F-L-E-S-S-N-E-R, 19, who listed an address in the 200 block of East Jackson Street, Lota, and Tristan Blake Zoller, Z-O-L-L-E-R, 20, who lived in the 100 block of North Elm Street in Lota, were both charged on Monday with felony reckless discharge of a firearm. Wyatt Henry Morris, 21, who listed an address in the 100 block of County Road 2700 East Rankin, was charged on Monday with felony aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Bond for all three men was set at $15,000. According to a police report, Morris was driving an SUV north near the intersection of County Roads 1700 East and 3200 North at 7:30 p.m. Thursday when the vehicle pulled a U-turn and traveled back to Rantoul. Flessner, the front seat passenger, was seen putting a firearm out of the window and firing one shot into the air. Rantoul Police and Champaign County Sheriff's deputies stopped the vehicle. When the three men got out of the SUV, police found a spent shotgun shell at the feet of Zoller, who was the back seat passenger. Officers also recovered a firearm containing live ammunition. All three men are due back in court on December 12th for appearance of counsel. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, November 28th, 2017, Giving Tuesday. We'll resume with part two of the News Gazette shortly. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a wonderful day.